Good afternoon, everybody, and I'd like to thank Sharon and Pat for inviting me and adding me to the program. It's really a privilege to be here. And I just want to say, if there isn't time for questions and you have questions for me, just please find me throughout the rest of the meeting, and I'll be happy to speak with you. So what I want to do for my talk is just to tell you about a drug that we have been pursuing to try to target the signaling pathway that is called NF-kappa-B. And we're interested to see if we could try to develop therapy against this pathway as a treatment for Duchenne. And the first slide, what basically shows is recognizes a lot of people who have been involved along with our lab to work on this project. And it first started with a graduate student many years ago, and it's been carried on by a postdoc named Jennifer Peterson. And there are colleagues at Ohio State that have been with us to work on this project with us, as well as Nationwide Children, University of Pittsburgh, and North Carolina, and we're also in partnership with a company called Theralogics. And then the work was originally funded by MDA, and for the past 5 years, been working on this project with funding from NINDS through a U01 project. Okay, so the signaling pathway in question here is, again, called NF-kappa-B. NF-kappa-B is a transcription factor. That means it's a protein that functions in the nucleus of a cell and binds to DNA and regulates genes. And NF-kappa-B is a protein that regulates a lot of immune genes, a lot of inflammatory genes. So typically when you have an infection or you have an injury, this is a protein that's going to be activated, and it's going to turn on a lot of inflammatory genes to protect you. And then what happens is, in a matter of just a few hours, it goes back to being silent again. It's inactivated. And what are we using for an arrow here? Just a mouse? Okay. So the inactivation happens because it returns back to being inert, back into the part of the cell where it doesn't have any activity. And the problem is that in many different diseases, we find that this protein is chronically on. It's always in the nucleus. It's always turning on a lot of immune genes, and really immune genes that are good for you when you can turn them off, but bad for you when they stay on for long periods of time. And you may have heard of the cytokine called TNF. Well, TNF is really good for you in an acute phase, but when you constantly stimulate cells with TNF, that's where you can push it more towards pathology, right? And so this is what we find in many different diseases, rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes. This pathway is on, and there are many drug companies that are, of course, very interested in trying to modulate and try to dampen this pathway. And then the one other player that's important to recognize for the talk is this complex here that's sitting on top that I'm circling with the mouse. So this is a protein complex that's called a kinase, and what that means is that when it's on, it turns everything else on downstream. So you need to be able to turn on that kinase in order for everything else down to also be turned on. And there is then evidence that we produced several years ago to first indicate to us that indeed this pathway was elevated in a dystrophic muscle. And so we started our work using the MDX mouse, which is where a lot of labs utilize, because it's a very good model, at least to tell us at the beginning what the phase of the pathology is going to look like. And what you see here are all these signals that represent the NF-kappa-B factor that's on because it's still binding to DNA. So here and here, all these muscles in an MDX mouse. It's a much higher level because you haven't turned it down. It's still firing. And because it's still firing then, it may be meaningful in terms of contributing to that pathology. So how did we test that question? Well, one of the ways we can do it is use a genetic approach. We actually have mice that lack this transcription factor, so it's deleted. And then if you cross that with the MDX mouse, then you can actually see if you get a response. And so if you look at a muscle in the MDX mouse, which is going to be here, you see how there's a lot of pathology, a lot of inflammation. But when you now delete this NF-kappa-B factor genetically, you can really improve that. And then what these results show down here is this is a marker for macrophages, for all this inflammation. And when you reduce NF-kappa-B, you see that you diminish the levels of these macrophages that appear. So that was indicative then that NF-kappa-B was indeed a contributing factor to this response that we are seeing. And then we wanted to ask, well, if we're seeing that there's an effect on these macrophages, can we actually confirm that there is NF-kappa-B really present in the macrophages? So what you see in this dotted circle is antibodies that we've used to basically telling us, yes, there is NF-kappa-B that's active, and we know that they're macrophages because we used a separate antibody against a macrophage, and when you see the two colors aligned to each other, that's really good indication that your particular pathway of interest is expressed in that particular cell. So we used another genetic approach to say, okay, can we actually remove this signaling pathway, NF-kappa-B, specifically in a macrophage? So now we're really trying to target the cell of interest. And what these data show then is what happens in the dystrophic muscle in an MDX mouse when you've only taken out the NF-kappa-B pathway specifically in the macrophage compartment. And what these data told us is that if we used a marker to look for muscle damage, you can see that there's a reduction in muscle damage here, and it's quantitated. And then if you look at the genes that NF-kappa-B normally regulates, I talked about TNF. There's another cytokine called IL-1-beta, and there's also other proteins called chemokines. And all of these are very, again, important for you. You need them in order to respond to an acute injury, but they're usually associated with pathology when they're constantly on. And when, in fact, when we reduce NF-kappa-B specifically in the macrophage, you can see that all these three bars here are all lower, indicating that just the removal of this pathway in just one cell type is enough to really dampen all these bad cytokines that we think contribute to the pathology. So what I would do here is just kind of give you a summary in terms of where we are in our thinking today about how this pathway contributes. And I talked so far about the macrophage, and that's what this cell is here. And what we think that NF-kappa-B is doing is that it's being activated in these cells. We don't know how it's being activated. But functionally, what we think it's doing is it's turning on a lot of cytokines for a very long period of time. And these cytokines, and there's many of them, contribute to then causing the injury in the muscle. And we also think there's a separate pathway inside the muscle cell that activates NF-kappa-B. And we think this activation of NF-kappa-B inside your muscle is basically causing the stem cells, what we call the satellite cells, to not activate. So we think that this pathway really is playing a role in inflammation by stimulating this inflammation inside the muscle. And at the same time, it's sort of inhibiting those new stem cells to be able to regenerate. So we think that it's acting in two different cellular compartments. So if that's true, then this would be considered a viable therapeutic target. And in fact, there have been several groups that have used different methods to try to target this pathway, either compounds, natural compounds, or other types of drugs. Or there's been gene therapy approaches at the University of Pittsburgh where they have again shown that if you try to take a virus and make something that blocks this pathway, you'll be able to have an effect. And all of these reports that have been published have all shown that if you block this pathway by some means, either by a drug or by a virus, you can get a better effect, again, using the MDX mouse model. So what I want to introduce you to is the drug that we've been using, which is called the NEMO binding domain. It's NBD is what we call it. It's really easy to remember, NBD. And the way this drug works is it's a peptide, so it's a protein. It's a small protein of 11 amino acids. And if you look at this, schematic right here, okay, this squiggly line is the peptide. It's supposed to represent this small peptide. And what it does is it basically interferes proteins getting together. And when it interferes proteins getting together, it means that you cannot activate NF-kappa-B. So it acts as a competitive inhibitor. And that's really good because that's a specific drug. We know what it's doing. We know what its target is. But the one challenge with peptide therapeutics is that it's not orally available. So right now, we can only administer this by either an IP injection or by intravenous injection. There are limitations using a peptide. Now, what you see, all these references on the bottom left-hand part of the slide, This is to indicate that there are, again, many labs. In fact, if you go in PubMed and you do a literature search on NBD, you're going to find 1,600 papers. So what that means is that there's many people that are using this for cancer, for diabetes, for Parkinson's, for colitis. Wherever they think that NF-kappa B is activated and there's a lot of inflammation, they're using NBD and showing that, at least in mice, it's safe and they're getting an effect. So we went ahead and said, well, what happens if we go ahead and treat MDX mice with this MBD peptide? So we've treated mice for about 4 weeks. We've delivered the drug by an IP injection, and we do the treatment three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Okay, so what the results show is that, at least histologically, so how does the muscle look? If we do a four-week treatment, what you can see is that compared to a mutant form of the peptide where there is inflammation, the wild type of the peptide makes the muscle look much better. Here, in a blinded study that we did in collaboration with Jim Tidball at UCLA, Jim's lab actually looked at infiltrating macrophages, and he can see a very nice infiltrating macrophage pool here with the mutant peptide. But if you use the drug, the wild type for the peptide, you see how effective it is at clearing the macrophages, the immune component in that dystrophic muscle. And all the bars down here just basically quantitate that. And what you see is that both in a diaphragm muscle or in a limb muscle in the MDX mouse, these gray bars here show that you're really dramatically reducing inflammation and muscle damage when you treat these mice with NBD. Another important study was done in collaboration with a muscle physiologist at Ohio State named Paul Jensen, in collaboration also with Jill Raphael Fortney. And what we asked is, you know, is it enough to make a muscle look better, or what you really want to do is improve its function? So in this particular study, Paul's lab is really good at taking diaphragm muscle strips, and what he does is he activates these and he looks for contractions. And we treated these mice for 4 weeks, and what you see here, this red bar, is this is the MDX diaphragm muscle, and you see how it's dramatically decreased in its ability to contract compared to a wild-type muscle. But this is what happens when you treat the mice for 4 weeks. You can get about a 43% rescue in that function. And if you compare the red bar here, which is again the MDX mouse, now you're stimulating it at all these different frequencies. The blue bar is what happens when you treat the mice with NBD peptide, and the green bar is a wild type. So this is how much closer we're getting to now a wild type muscle. So that was very encouraging because we're saying we're making the muscle look better, we're actually getting the diaphragm to function better. But as everybody in this room knows, the other type of muscle that we also need to consider is the heart. Because as we're able to better manage patients, we're going to also have to consider the effects in cardiomyopathy. So the next study we did with the same group was to say, can we take another mouse model? This is a much more severe mouse model where both dystrophin and utrophin have been deleted. These mice do not survive past 11 weeks of age, and they do develop cardiomyopathy. And now if we treat these mice for a longer period of time, we did this treatment for 8 weeks, and now we take a heart muscle and put them in that same type of force measurement, and we now ask what's happening to that force when we induce that heart muscle to contract. What you can see is here, the diseased mice have about a twofold decrease. This is a 100% drop in the force that they can produce from that heart muscle. But you can see here, an 8-week treatment, we completely rescue back to wild type. So this is encouraging for many different reasons. One, the data shows that now in two different animal models, we can get a protection at the functional level. And second, there are not many pharmacologics out there that can produce this type of response on a heart muscle. So to us, these are very profound results. In the past year, what we've also tried to ask ourselves is, okay, with the drug, we can get a better effect on the heart, but is this really, really specific to NF-kappa B? And that's really important to know. So what we did this past year is we took that genetic approach again. We went into the mouse. We took a genetic approach where we're deleting out the gene specifically now only in the heart cells. And you can do this. And then when the mice were about 10 months old, we then went back to Paul Jensen's lab and we said, Paul, in a blinded fashion now, record those same measurements on the heart muscle. And what was really nice to see is that this lower line that you're seeing here, this is the MDX mouse, and this is at 10 month old, and we know that it has a deficit in force. And there's two lines here that overlap each other. One is when we treat the MDX mice with this drug again, NBD, which again protects that cardiac muscle, just as I showed you before. But the second line shows what happens genetically when we remove just the NF-kappa pathway in a cardiac cell, and we get that same protection. So now this is very nice because it's saying that NF-kappa B is what's contributing to that force deficit, and we can have data genetically and pharmacologically. We know that it's important for contributing to cardiomyopathy, at least in the animal model. Now, what didn't reproduce with the skeletal muscle is that we thought we'd also see the cardiac muscle look better. But when we've looked for fibrosis, and this is a 12-month MDX heart, which has fibrosis, we really didn't see any difference with the heart didn't look better. So we are getting definitely functional improvement, but we do not get histological improvement, and that's still a little bit puzzling to us, and we're trying to figure that out. But when you talk to a lot of doctors who treat Duchenne boys and have to face the cardiomyopathy issue, they've told us that improving function is probably going to be more important than making the heart look better. So we're encouraged by that. Okay. So I'll try to wrap it up now with the last few data slides. So with these data, then, we were encouraged to try to ask the next question is, could we try to treat a larger species and see the same effects? So in collaboration with Joe Cornegay's lab at University of North Carolina, we've spent the last 3 years working with Joe, learning how to scale up NBD, moving from just a university peptide lab to now going to a commercial vendor and asking them to make a lot more drug for us, and then being able to understand that we had to now deliver the drug a different way because we weren't working with just a 20-gram mouse. We were working with a 5 or 10-kilogram dog. So what Joe produced for us was 6 dogs that had the dystrophin deficiency. We had 3 controls, 3 normal dogs, and we treated these dogs for a period of 4 months. We used IV infusions. We treated them Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And again, this was for a 4-month treatment. Now, the Cornegay lab for this study didn't have enough dogs that we could treat with a vehicle compound, which would have been probably the best control. But I think we've just finished talking about the importance of natural history data. The Cornegay lab has spent many years now accumulating a lot of natural history data on the GRMD model. So all of these data that I'm going to show you were compared to his natural history data set that's been published. Okay. So there are no movies to show you, but what I can tell you is that there was a profound effect in body weight. So dogs that were treated for 4 months had an increase of 4 times their body weight. Usually a dystrophic dog is going to gain only about twice their body weight in a period of 2 months to 6 months, where the MBD treatment increased that body weight fourfold. So that was very encouraging. Histologically, this looked very similar to skeletal muscle that we're used to seeing in either the MDX mouse model or the DKO model, in that the muscles looked much better. They were less inflamed. And when we looked at a total of 4 muscles, 3 hind limb muscles, as well as the diaphragm, and we quantitated all this, we could see a 35% reduction in inflammation, a 35% reduction in muscle damage or necrosis, and we also saw a reduction in regeneration. These muscles phenotypically model much more of the human condition where we know that regeneration is impaired, and we could see that we were decreasing the injury, and that also caused then the decrease in the regeneration. And then finally, what we also wanted to test was function. So in the Cornegay lab, what they do is they have a setup where they can actually attach the dog's paw on a lever. Now, these are anesthetized dogs. And then they can artificially stimulate the nerve, the motor neuron, that's going to make that muscle contract. And it's either going to extend the lever or it's going to flex the lever back. So depending on which nerve you stimulate, you can either get an extensor motion or a flexor motion, right? And the Cornegay lab had already published this work when they treated dogs with prednisone. And they showed nicely that if you treat dogs with prednisone, just like with patients, you can get improvement in muscle function. And so we basically designed this trial exactly like was done with prednisone. And what we saw is very similar results to prednisone, is that we got about a 90% increase in that extensor motion. So when we recorded the ability of the dog to push that lever. So functionally, we can see an improvement as well. And then finally, there's another outcome measure that the Cornegate Lab likes to look at because it's a measure of ambulation, and that's the joint angle. So when the muscle weakens, the posture of the dogs change, and the pelvis bone angle changes. And usually the bigger the angle, the more ambulation you've lost, the more contractors there are. And so when we treat the dogs here with NBD, what we can see is a significant improvement in shortening up that angle and making it much more closer to what a wild dog looks like. I'll end by saying that although a lot of these measurements had a very favorable outcome, and although the dogs were able to be treated for 4 months, the one indication that we saw in terms of a safety profile that we have to be mindful of is that at about 2 months during the treatment, the dogs did undergo what we call infusion reactions. They were very short. We were able to control them better with Benadryl. And I've been told by some vet colleagues on our campus that this is often happens when you use a dog model for disease, and it's why you have to pre-dose them with Benadryl and sometimes steroids. So we're very mindful of these data, and we want to make sure that we're going to, as we move forward, that we'll be thinking of that as a potential safety concern. But this just summarizes the data and where we are right now in understanding what we can do with NBD. Is at least in a mouse, I think we have confidence in saying that in two animal models, we've been able to show both safety and efficacy on both skeletal muscles as well as cardiac muscle. We know we can take NBD and treat for long periods of time. At least in the dog, we've been able to do a 4 months treatment by IV. We did see infusion reactions, and that could correlate to an immune response that we're going to be following up on. And the way we're going to follow up on that is that we've already started our pre-GLP farm tox study now at a CRO, and we're going to be using monkeys instead of dogs to try to understand whether NBD can be safe long-term because of the humans and monkeys have a much more similar immune system. The body weights had significant improvement when we treated with NBD, and we also saw a response in function and joint angles. So where we are now is we've identified a commercial vendor that can make NBD peptide for us in the clinic in a GMP form. We are doing the pharmacology and toxicology safety, and we're hoping that with the safety data, we'll be able to write up our R&D application and be able to submit it within the year. And at least if everything were to work out, we could be able to start a phase one study at Nationwide Children, and Jerry Mendell would be the clinical coordinator for that study. So I'll stop there, and if there are no time for questions, I'll be happy to answer them, in the lobby or wherever we see each other.